2 Timothy chapter 4. Verse 16. 2 Timothy 4 and verse 16. At my first answer, no man stood with me, but all men forsook me. I pray God that it may not be laid to their charge. Notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me and strengthened me, that by me the preaching might be fully known, and that all the Gentiles might hear, and I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. Now, if this was a wedding, I would say the congregation may please be seated. I don't know what I'm supposed to say, but you may take your seat. Had we time, I would like to have read with you in Hebrews 11, as well as in Philippians chapter 1, because I have before me the idea of standing for God. A believer standing alone, a couple standing together, and an assembly standing united. A believer standing alone. Paul says that he had to stand alone. No one stood with him when he was giving his defense before this wicked man. Now, it seems to me that the Bible gives us numerous examples of believers who were, for the most part, wrenched from their homes and surroundings and found themselves immersed in a pagan society. There are seven of them. Obviously, I'm not even going to look at more than perhaps one or two of them. But let me just give them to you, because in the case of many of them, we follow their very painful expatriation process from their homeland to a heathen land. And we're looking at believers who had to learn to stand for God with nobody around to help them. Here they are. Joseph, Moses, Daniel, Ezekiel, Mordecai, Nehemiah, and Paul. Not all of those, I grant you, in their cases, are we watching them being ripped out of the fabric of home life. But instead of their being brought up in a warm environment that would cultivate godliness, instead of their being enveloped in a cocoon of a Christian community, we find them immersed, as I have said, in a very, very difficult set of circumstances, a pagan society. With each of them, there are important lessons. With Joseph, it is the standards of purity. And the very simple lesson that young believers must get hold of: guard your heart. Guard your heart. Think of a man now like Joseph, taken away from a place where God was feared, where the word of God was known, where the promises had been deposited there in that family, and suddenly finding himself in Egyptian society. The babble of all these voices, the siren call of that wicked woman. I would like to just remind young believers here that we have voices that we must heed, and those voices are the voices of God and his word and our conscience. We must listen to them. You must have it in your heart that you are tuning in to God and to what he says, or the voices around you will lead you astray. It's a remarkable thing that they have found. I've watched it at work, actually. I'm not even sure if I can get the whole mouthful out. It's RAS, and it stands for Reticular Articulation Syndrome. You know what it is? That a person, particularly women, can zero in on the one voice that they have to hear. I've sat in meetings and heard a baby cry in the nursery and looked at my wife and said, is that ours? And she'll nod her head and say, no, like, you mean after all these years you don't know what our baby sounds like? A woman has the remarkable ability to shut out all the other sounds and catch the one voice she has to hear. You know what you have to do, young Christian? You have to shut out all the other voices and catch the one voice you have to listen to. If you are going to maintain in this wicked world standards of purity, you must listen to the word of God, the voice of God. There are as well vices that we must shun. And there we see that young man carrying with him down into that foreign land the dreams that God had communicated to him. They were not the vaporous imaginations of a young man who wanted to become great. They were divine communications of what God wanted to do with him, how God wanted to use him, the way in which God wanted to bless him. And he maintained that, you see, in his heart. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Nothing severed the links between his soul and the God of Israel, even though he was in Egypt. And there are virtues to prize. To allow nothing, dear young believer, to spoil your life for God. Joseph's standards of purity. When you come to Moses, the values of eternity. Joseph's lesson is guard your heart. Moses' lesson is lift your eyes. Look beyond this world. Listen to the verbs that are used in Hebrews about this man. Refusing, choosing, looking, esteeming. He turned down a promotion. Let's put it in plain language. He turned down a promotion. We'll make you king. But he turned down a promotion because his eyes were looking somewhere else. He was thinking about an eternal world. He was looking beyond. He was drinking in a future. And he was not going to allow himself to build and live and invest everything he had in a temporary world. When there was that permanent world that he was traveling to. And oh, my dear young believer, it's such so thrilling. You know, last night, I have to tell you, it was so cheering to me to see how many young Christians were at the hall in Woodland. Because in a crowd this size, like, you just wouldn't realize how many young lives there are here. And last night, there were so many young believers. Now there was a large percentage of wannabe young people. There were middle-aged people trying to sneak into the crowd. But there were a large number of young people there. And now if even half of them are here today, there is no way of gauging the potential of your life. And if the values of eternal things get into your heart and soul and you live for that coming world, well, I'll tell you, Moses missed being a mummy and turned into a leader for God because his eye was on the future. Now, I don't have time to look any more at those. You can look at them yourselves. It's the influence of integrity with Daniel. Think of the identity that was preserved by Mordecai, the preservation of identity. Mordecai the Jew, nothing would take that from his name, that he was in that foreign land, but he was still a Jew, Mordecai the Jew. They were believers who learned how to stand alone. And you, dear young believer, if you get that under your belt spiritually, if you learn that lesson, how to do what's right no matter what's happening around you, how to stand when there's nobody else to hold your hand and help you, you will have learned a lesson that will stand you in good stead for years to come. I want you to think about a couple or couples standing together. Now, the Word of God gives us a whole gamut of couples to look at, ranging all the way from Ahab and Jezebel, solidly united and doing evil, to Aquila and Priscilla, spiritually united and serving God and doing good. In between, we have couples like David and Michael, divided in their loyalty. Elimelech and Naomi, perhaps divided in their thoughts of leaving and in their departure. I want to just grab, as time permits, I want to just grab a couple of these couples that the Scriptures give to us and try and pick for us some lessons that we need to learn. And, of course, I'm speaking now to not so much young believers as young couples. Before I say anything, let me say that there are things that we as married believers are going to need to preserve. Have a communication. Have a consideration and love. Have a companionship. Communication. You remember, let me speak to the young men here. Do you remember when you couldn't wait to get home and get the phone and get her on the line and talk to her? For hours? Now you come home from work and you grunt. She's been working all day with a baby and a few children whose vocabulary perhaps doesn't get above grade 3. You've been moving in the corporate world, constantly listening to conversations, entering into conversations. You come home and you want silence. She welcomes you home and she wants an ear to talk to. Communication. How are you going to raise those children without communication? Unless you're together in your desires for God. Unless you're together, you're united, you're standing together, and you're communicating. Remember when you loved to be together? In fact, what you really loved was being together alone. Still the same? Companionship? Getting off by yourself? There's some elderly believers I know, and I tell you what I find so thrilling about them sometimes. They have never lost what we have heard already set before us by our brother Kerry yesterday. They have never lost a liking for each other. They enjoy each other's company. Don't let anything rob you of that.
anything.
How about consideration and love? Still holding the door for her? Still getting her coat for her?
See, what happens is, after a little while, you take each other for granted. And you fail to continue those little things that meant so much in the early part. You may not have, dear brother, you may not have a romantic bone in your body, but you got her flowers when you were dating, didn't you? Why? Because you wanted to win her. Now, set it as the challenge that what you want to do, and I'm not trying to introduce a note of insecurity here, but set it as a challenge that what you want to do is you want to maintain in her heart, you want to maintain that affection for you that she had because you were making her number one.
Now, very quickly, think about Amram and Jochebed. That clock is merciless. Amram and Jochebed, a common direction, working together. Their direction, the value of the people of God. They're communicating this to their child. Think of that invaluable exercise they had for the people of God. And the discernment that they had as they, those intangible qualities that they saw in Moses, that he was a proper child. Has God given you a son or daughter? Then allow God to impress upon you the value of that child and what he or she could become for God. It was only their exercise that allowed them to see, this boy can be used by God. And they preserved his life from a world that would have swallowed him up.
Because they had an exercise for the people of God and for God's things. The immeasurable influence they had. It may be that there are some newly saved people here who would not even know that Moses' parents are Amram and Jochebed. Those names are not high on our list of common names. And yet, listen to what we read. Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua. Now, you drop a pebble in the stream and you watch those concentric circles. Now, when you get to the outer circle, you're reading all the elders that outlived Joshua. Let's work toward the middle. Joshua. He influenced those elders. Joshua. He was influenced by Moses, who was influenced by Amram and Jochebed. A life work. A life work to raise a boy for God. A life work. They were doing it together.
You work together? Unitedly, standing together, working together, around the house.
It's okay. It's all right, dear brother, if your home is your castle, that's fine. Just make sure that she's the queen and not the galley slave, that you're working with her. See? That you're working with her.
We are blessed in the East with a dear brother who's here today, Mr. Gustafson, who has an incredible mind for statistics.
So let me give you a statistic. It has been, after careful analyses of data that has come down to us from the Garden of Eden till today, it can be authoritatively stated that no husband was ever shot to death by his wife while he was helping her do the dishes. You're safe. You're safe at that sink. See? You're safe. Do you? Do you? In the ordinary everyday things, the way you get ready for a meeting is on your knees while she gets the kids washed and bathed, changed and dressed and everything ready, and because you need time alone with God or together in everything.
My time is gone, so I can't tell you about Manoah and his wife with their common discipline to raise their children for God. Just remember,
dear parent, just remember that the education of your child is very important. And there are people who are deeply concerned about the school systems in our countries here in North America. And I don't think it is my business to tell you how to raise your children. I do want to tell you, please don't turn your children into guinea pigs for modern philosophies. Because when that writer prints his recantation or his next edition explaining why he was wrong the first time, his apology to you after your children have been ruined is going to give you very little consolation. Get all the help you can, but remember the ultimate textbook for raising your children is lying before me on this podium, the Word of God. And while homeschooling may be some option on some occasion, the important thing is this, there must be home Sunday schooling. Home Sunday schooling. Don't be so overwhelmed with trying to make sure that they learn biology and chemistry and English and Latin and whatever, that you give over the responsibility of teaching the scriptures to your children, to the gospel preacher, or to the Sunday school teacher, or to somebody else. That's our responsibility with our own families, the family altar, teaching them the word of God, raising them in the fear of God.
I better close. So let me just remind you about the value of an assembly standing united. Mr. Dixon reminded us yesterday of those important words, with all lowliness and meekness, with long-suffering, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. If we were all marked by lowliness, meekness, long-suffering, if where Paul speaks in Philippians about believers standing together and striving together for the faith of the gospel, if we were all occupied with the spread of the gospel, the work of God, if we were all of the same mind, not your having my mind, not my finally agreeing with you and adopting your thinking, but if each of us had the mind of Christ, would that do anything for unity in the assembly? There are things that tear apart unity in the assembly. That telephone extension in your house can tear apart unity in the assembly. You use it to down the believers. You use it to cast question marks on the elders. You use it to spread aspersion or cast doubts on the character of some believer. Just a little hint here, just a little statement there, just a little bit of gossip. And instead of building into the assembly, you will help to tear it apart. One man saw a detail from, now I'll explain this now before I say it, that I'm going to quote him. This isn't my language, I'll quote him. He saw a guard watching over a detail of people from an asylum for the mentally ill, and they were out doing some very easily done manual labor just to get them out. And this guard was just watching over them. He walked over and he said to the guard, one guard? He said, there's, what, 18 people here? And you brought them out and it's just one guard? Guard says, no problem. And I'll laugh at this. You tuck this away in the back of your mind. He says, no problem. Lunatics never unite. They never unite. They never get together. Don't seem to have that concept of strength in numbers. I think we better do a little soul searching, dear brethren, sometimes. Make sure that we're thinking right. And that we want to have the mind of Christ, and that as the assembly is so valuable to God, we should do everything we can to unite, to join, to throw everything we have into the things of God to see them prosper. God help us to learn as individuals how to stand alone, as couples in our homes, how to stand together, and as assemblies, how to stand united.